Time to welcome in our friend Chad Finn of the Boston Globe to, well, maybe make some sense of what we saw over the weekend. Chad, the great thing about watching sports is that every once in a while you see something you've never seen before.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to make sense of that, Rich. So good talking to you. Happy holidays. We'll talk in a couple weeks.
Oh, my. It was, I've been in a couple minor car accidents. And that's all it reminded me of is how when those accidents happen, that time stands still for a moment and you know how things are going to play out, but you can't believe it's happening.
Yeah, and sometimes the car appears out of nowhere, sort of like Chandler Jones did, standing right there in the middle of the field while the ball floats toward him. It was I had to write immediately after the game, so I tried to think about context of how stupid that particular play was and where it's going to sort of come down in NFL history. It's the dumbest Patriots play I've ever seen. People cited the putting Gronk on the field for as a safety against the Dolphins a few years back when Kenyon Drake had that wild touchdown run. But this isn't close to that. That was a failing of the guys ahead of Gronk. He's having him as the last resort. This is just ultimate brain lock. And there's the Pizarcik fumble, miracle at the Meadowlands, the dumb formation the Colts had against the Patriots, a couple Leon Lett plays, but the butt fumble, but this one's right up there. It was funny, actually, a reader mentioned that the Seahawks, Pete Carroll's decision to have Russell Wilson throw.
Oh, yeah.
Marshawn Lynch. That wasn't as dumb as this. At least it was Russell Wilson, and he's thrown touchdown passes in his life. And, it was a small chance you might catch a Patriots off guard there or something and win the Super Bowl. This was the biggest brain lock I think I've ever seen on a football field.
Well, kudos to Jacoby Myers, who stood there and took the question and answered it and took responsibility for it. But there were others. I mean, Ramondre Stevenson getting rid of the ball in the first place. The play call itself, which obviously was not the play call, but even the bizarre draw play call. And then Bill Belichick's statement that his quarterback doesn't have the strength in his arm to throw a 50, 60-yard Hail Mary at the end of a game.
Yeah, it kind of makes me wonder if Mac has an injury because the clips all over YouTube or whatever of him throwing the football that far back to Alabama. I mean, 55 yards on the fly, under pressure, rolling out. He doesn't have the greatest arm in the world. Not the most accurate arm in the world, at least yesterday, but he should be able to make that throw. I don't know what Belichick's point was with that, and he kind of walked it back today. And in terms of the play at the end of the game, players kind of had each other's backs yesterday with that. Myers is such a respected guy in that locker room, but Hunter Henry kind of revealed today that laterals were not a part of the play call. It was a simple running play and get as far as you can get. And I think Stevenson's first lateral inspired Myers to try to do something greater, and he kind of admitted afterwards he's the hero. I think if I were him, Rich, I would have said, oh, I thought we were down one, and just pretend I had some like stupid mental brain lock rather than admitting that the game was tied and I, threw an air balloon up there anyway.
And man, the Chandler Jones stiff arm of Mac Jones, that's going to be one of those. That's sort of the reverse of the Jason Veritek A-Rod play. This is one that Raiders fans will remember fondly forever. And I don't know, I felt like maybe Matt Patricia was happy about that too.
Might have kept him quiet. I don't know if Max peeled himself off the turf. I guess we did see him at the podium afterwards, but he got crushed into the sod there by Jones. Had really no chance of making the tackle, and that's going to be the enduring image from that. Not the football in the air or Chandler Jones picking it off or Myers heaving it essentially blindly, but Chandler Jones stiff-arming Mac Jones into the turf until he looked like he was about 2 feet tall. So that's the one we're going to be seeing forever right there.
But how did we get there? How did this Patriots defense that had largely shut down the Raiders all day long allow them to march the length of the field in that final 90 seconds?
Well, you know, a lot of good things happened yesterday before the Hindenburg. I mean, they got defense held Myers, Adams to four catches, 23 yards in the second half for Jacobs, 70 in the first half, 93 total. Really wasn't a factor in the passing game, which he's also really good at. Duggar's pick six was a great read and play. Just good. And Stevenson, I mean, that was an admirable performance right up to the final 3 seconds or whatever it was. Not knowing if he's going to play until about an hour before game time. Questionable because of the ankle injury. He goes out and runs for 172 on 19 carries. That was really impressive. But they have a fundamental problem that starts with their offensive coordinator, and their quarterback is part of it. I mean, Mac, I don't mind Mac getting mad, especially when Patricia's late getting the play in, but you can't do it on a day where you're 7 of 23 in the final three quarters of the game. And what was it, 47 passing yards in the first quarter, so 65 the rest of the game, and 39 of those came on a pass to Myers. So he was abysmal. And he looks bad for the temper tantrums that he had, because as much as the coaching staff has let him down this year, he just played terribly yesterday.
Yeah, I have to wonder. I would love to have been a fly on the wall, because Josh McDaniels talked to him for quite a while after the game. You wonder what went in his ear from his former coordinator.
I told you, Matt. Matt sucks. <You know? laughs> I think he was probably trying to prop them up. I mean, they had a great relationship last year. McDaniels isn't going to have to deal with them again this season, and probably telling him to keep his head up, because he has a lot of respect for the kid. I mean, really easy to forget now, but he had a terrific rookie season, and it's all gone down the drain here to where you forget about the good things that happened. 9-4 start. You know, he made the Pro Bowl after Lamar Jackson bowed out. Not the greatest honor in the world, but something that confirms what a good season he had for a first-year quarterback. And now it's just a complete mess, to the point you don't know what he is, whether he's your quarterback of the future. And I suspect McDaniels was just trying to give him a little positive encouragement because of his past relationship with him.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot, and fans talk a lot about Matt Patricia, but the special teams coordinator shouldn't be out looking for jobs either right now if he's expecting a promotion, because what a dismal performance that was yesterday.
Yeah, I thought that last year, Cam Accord. I mean, they had 3 punts blocked last season, which is something that rarely happened to them. I don't even know if, Jake Bailey had one blocked in his career before last season. He might have, but that was a constant problem last year, punt blocking. Clearly, they were confused yesterday by something they saw, because Jabril Peppers, who's been a really good pickup for the Patriots, had no idea what he was doing on that play. So they saw something they weren't prepared for. That's what it looked like. And Bailey is a guy they signed to a big contract in the offseason for a punter. He's been hurt. He's on IR now, but he was having a really bad season, and that reflects back on the coach too. So that's always been one of their real areas of strength, and it hasn't been for the better part of a year now, even with the plays Marcus Jones makes out there. So I feel like that's one of the spots on the coaching staff where an upgrade would make a lot of sense.
Chad Finn with us here on Downtown. All of this craziness at the end of the game obscured the fact that, for my money, that was as bad a performance from a football commentator as I can recall seeing. Good Lord, Jonathan Vilma's terrible.
It's funny. I was listening to the Brian Barrett podcast today. He does the Boston podcast for Bill Simmons and Ringer. He used to be on WEI, and he said sort of offhandedly, "I really like Jonathan Vilma on that broadcast." And I was like, is this sarcasm? Is my sarcasm completely detector completely destroyed from years on social media? Because he was terrible. And beyond that, he had no sense for what the Patriots are right now. Neither did Kenny Albert, the play-by-play guy, where they kept saying, "Wow, weird to say the Patriots make special teams mistakes, or their offense operating this way." It's been going on for a while, guys. I mean, go back to the bye week last year. Their offense has been a disaster, and they've been making these special teams mistakes for quite a while. This is not the Patriots you remember, and they probably should have been aware of that in terms of their preparation.
All right, let's shift gears, get away from the Patriots, and something bright and wonderful like the Red Sox offseason. All right, basically they traded DHs with the Dodgers. I don't mind Justin Turner, even though he's almost my age, but he's a decent bat that can fill in at third base once in a while. But is there a plan? What is the plan? Can you figure it out?
I'm suspicious. I mean, he's a pretty good player, really good after June last year. I think he hit like 322 from July onward. Alex Spira then is gone today. But we see what happens when they try to gain leverage in situations. Trevor Story's contract was leveraged against Xander Bogaerts going to free agency, and we saw how that played out. They never made him a competitive offer. They never had any intention of signing Xander Bogaerts based on their actions rather than what they told us. 2 years for Turner, that covers them in a little gap if they don't get closer on Rafael Devers than they already are. And, you know, they're indicating that they're willing to go, can't remember the Bloom quote exactly, but they're willing to go a little higher than what's comfortable or something like that in negotiations with Devers, but what's comfortable to them. I mean, they offered him Matt Olson money last year. They've lowballed him out of the gate. So do they have any intention of signing him? So I see the Turner signing in a guy capable of playing third base for a couple of years, and it makes me suspicious that they're not as intent on keeping Devers around as they should be.
You wrote about the changes to the broadcast crew. Joe Castiglione at 75, yeah. Cutting back a little bit, is only going to do about half the schedule next year. And Lou Merlone, who's got some extra time on his hands now, will do, what, some 60 or more games. That's, I think, a good move. I much as I really couldn't listen too much to Lou in the afternoons on EEI,
yeah.
but Lou doing the games is pretty solid because he knows the game.
Yeah, I had a scathing email from Shaughnessy this weekend after I wrote it. Nesson should hire Maloney, which, by the way, I think will happen. They've got so much space to fill with Eckersley gone, and it all split up between Millar and Uke and Maserati. They got to fill the 75 games Eck did last year, and still probably have to hire another person or two. So I think Lou will end up doing that too. But yeah, as a radio host, I mean, you know, he dumped on the Globe all the time, had some political opinions I don't necessarily agree with. I do like him on baseball, and I think it makes a lot of sense in both ways for him to end up in those roles. I think otherwise on the radio broadcast, they don't have a deal with McDonough to come back yet, but that'll probably happen. And Will Fleming will be doing a lot of the play-by-play as well.
Yeah, it's a good move for Lou. Boy, that the EEI shakeup, I don't even know what's going on. Now, who did they move to work with Gresh?
Fourier.
Okay, okay.
He's cool with that because it allows him to go see his kids' games. His daughter's a freshman playing college basketball. Got a son. He's a pretty good athlete as well, and he hasn't been able to go to a lot of that stuff. So working 10-2 works better for him. So he's okay with the move, even though it's, moving to that midday gig is less money than being in one of the drive times. But, and they moved Rich Keefe, who was with Gresh in middays to evenings, and moved on from Mike Monansky, who's been their sort of jack of all trades forever. I thought Gresh and Keefe really worked well together, and was surprised they did that. And I know Rich is kind of disappointed about it, too.
And so who gets to be the sacrificial lamb in afternoon drive to get crushed by Felger and Maz?
Well, they're keeping Megan Ottolini and Christian Arcand, who they hired about a month ago, and is probably seeing that dog with flames meme every time he walks into the office. But they're going to hire somebody else, too. Their boss wouldn't even answer my requests about it, but the rumors are going to bring Adam Jones over from 98.5, who their boss, Mike Thomas, put the original 98.5 lineup together, intends on has hired Jones before, and people think he'll do it again. Jones's contract's up at the end of this month, but he's telling everybody who asks that it's not happening. Jones is. So we'll see if he's telling the truth or not. But I my hunch is that that's how it goes.
Interesting times indeed. And by the way, do we have a name yet for that, for the play yesterday, the game? I know people were searching on social media. What will this one be remembered as?
What the bleep were you thinking, Jacoby? Probably were. I called it something today in my column, but I can't remember what it was. But it's not going to stick, whatever it was. I can't remember it.
Well, because all the good names you can't say on the air or print in a family newspaper.
That's right, yeah. You can try. Sometimes they catch it on the desk. Sometimes they don't.
Chad, we thank you. As always, hey, have a wonderful Christmas and New Year's, and we'll check in with you again if we're both still around in 23.
Sounds good, Rich. Take care, and same to you and yours.
All right, thanks, Chad. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe here with us.